Because as China is reducing its purchasing of debt, just look at it this way. If other countries are not going to buy the debt because of our geopolitical positions, then they can't sell the debt. So their interest rate has to go up. So it's really, you know, he may have started this on the inflationary idea, but it's taking on a life of its own.
You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are watching and listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. Hey, it's August 3rd, 2023, and there's so much going on in the world that we had to get Martin Armstrong back. Martin, you got a new book coming out called De-Dollarization, and that's got a hyphen in it. I didn't know that it was spelled that way, but we should start there first. With everything that's happened with the dollar, the dollar was trading at near records. Then it pulled back, had a substantial pullback down to under 100. Now it's back, going back higher. De-dollarization, fact, fiction, fancy, and de-dollarize, great. But what do you wind up with then? The BRICS currency, it seems to me that the whole BRICS currency is getting created because their currencies are collapsing as well, and they got to come up with an alternative. Otherwise, they're going to be even more stuck with the dollar.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole problem is that the main, I would say, the real backing of the dollar is the fact that the United States is kind of like Britain was before World War One, that everybody was issuing bonds in China, United States, even in British pounds, because that was the financial center of the world. If you wanted to raise money, sell bonds, you had to go to London. You know, after, you know, World War II, that simply became United States. So the real problem with like BRICS or anything else replacing the dollar is kind of absurd, because they're not going to be the ones financing the world, you know? So, countries still go to Goldman Sachs, et cetera, Greece, you know, Malaysia, whatever. Or, you know, you really think they're going to go to India and Brazil and China for launching systems and stocks and stuff? I mean, yeah. You know, you have to look at this from what is really the backing of the dollar, and that is the deep financial markets that we have today. That doesn't mean it lasts forever. I mean, Britain lost it; we will lose it too. But it's not to the BRICS for anything of this particular nature. Most of this has turned on the fact that, since the Biden administration, the neocons have gotten control of basically everything. And so they made the stupid mistake of removing Russia from SWIFT. And in doing so, you basically choreographed to the rest of the world, hey, you either do what we say or we will remove you. So then you have China setting up chips. You have Iran setting up one. And so now the threat of removing a country from the SWIFT system doesn't carry what it used to. Effectively what they did was they divided the world economy. So globalization is really pretty much dead. That's the real problem. So the de-dollarization thing, that it's got nothing really to do with our deficits or anything of that nature. It's geopolitical. You can't be out there threatening China and Russia and then go to them and say, oh, gee, okay, fine. You know, will you lend us $100 billion so we can buy some bullets to shoot you? You know? Uh-huh. It's just, at some point you do not buy the debt of your enemy. And that's really, what's taking place. So China's been selling off U.S. debt every month. And you can't blame them. I mean, if we're going to continue this nonsense of attacking the people that actually buy the bonds, then they're not going to buy them.
Right. All right. So that leaves us with the banking crisis. All right. We've seen four banks fail, one bank being taken under, I think it was called. Is this banking crisis going to be as bad as 08 and 09?
More so in Europe rather than in the United States. And the primary problem is that they kept interest rates artificially low for too long. Europe was the worst. They went to negative rates in 2014. And then you require the banks to have collateral and reserves, and they have to be in government bonds. So you look at Europe, and pension funds and banks, they've lost 30-40% of their capital. Because as interest rates go up, the negative bonds, you have to reduce the price to compensate for the current interest rate. And that's really what took down the few banks in the U.S. that, I've dealt with governments and corporations for 40 years. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that most of these boards, they don't have the expertise.
Right.
And, a lot of them are simply, bean counters and lawyers. That's it. They don't. Look at SVB. Yeah. Effectively, there wasn't anybody on the board that had any banking experience.
Well, at least with Signature, you had Barney Frank, right? He was very confidence inspiring, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. this is the problem. They appoint people to boards mainly because they have some sort of a political connection and not that they have any expertise in what the subject matter really is. I've gone to board meetings and it's just, I feel like, I'm teaching kindergarten. It's really bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's for sure. So interest rates though, at what point, how far can Powell take this? How far is he going to go?
Actually, he's got no choice. It's out of control.
Yeah.
Because as China is reducing its purchasing of debt, just look at it this way. If other countries are not going to buy the debt because of our geopolitical positions, then they can't sell the debt. So their interest rate has to go up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, he may have started this on the inflationary idea, but it's taking on a life of its own. And because you have, like I said, in Europe, negative rates since 2014, the more the losses, the higher they can't afford to buy any more bonds.
Right.
So, that's the whole crisis that we have. And only the banks that are more sophisticated in at least hedging their portfolios, can really survive. But you look at SVB, they basically, this woke agenda is absurd. They're hiring people because they're a woman or they're color or this, not the expertise. It's really pathetic. But you're supposed to hire the most qualified person, not the least.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a meritocracy. At least that's when we grew up. That's what they taught us. You work hard, you study, you get good grades. So mine weren't that best, but they were okay. And then you go and you start a career, and that's your pathway to the American dream. And now it's to be a favored class and get benefits bestowed upon you by the ruling class, right? It's kind of been stood on its head. So
yeah, I have clients that have sent me emails that their son has gone through MBA and everything else, and they can't get a job because they're not right color, or they don't fill a slot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right. So we got a lot of problems. What about the stock market? It seems to be laughing in the face of all of these major issues, even higher interest rates. So we haven't seen that before.
Actually, we have. If you don't listen to the propaganda about interest rates in the stock market and just step back and look at it. The Federal Reserve started raising interest rates as soon as Trump came to office. They were going up throughout his entire administration. Yet they called it the Trump rally.
Mm-hmm.
When I was writing the greatest bull market back in 1986, which we will republish, but I found it fascinating that the thinking process before 1929 was completely opposite. As long as interest rates were going up, people were cheering because it meant that there was still a demand for money.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go into a recession or a depression, interest rates collapse because nobody's willing to borrow. That's why, the ECB went to negative rates to try and punish people for saving. But if you don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, you don't go out and spend lavishly. Mm-hmm. I've published studies on our site. I mean, you can Google, call money rates back to 1899, and you'll see that, the stock market has never peaked with the same level of interest rates twice. What it is that if you think the stock market will double next year, you'll pay 20%. But if you think it's not going to go up 1%, you won't pay 1%.
Yeah.
So it's really a combination of expectations and whatever the rate is. So right now, you have to also ask yourself, okay, fine. I've gotten some people say, well, gee, you don't think the stock market is going to completely crash? And then what do you do with the money? You run to bonds? Do you really want to buy government bonds in this atmosphere? And then they look at, no. Okay, so what are you going to do?
Question.
You go to cash and you keep bundles of cash in your house and they cancel it. So you have a lot of people that are diversifying. That's why the real estate market is up. Antique coins, art, stuff like this, pretty much anything off the grid, as well as the stock market and even gold. Mm. These are all tend to be tangible assets, so to speak. Whereas the traditional flight to quality, as you sell the stocks and you buy the bonds. Well, this time that's not working.
Yeah, nobody wants them. Hey, so what about real estate? We're still having a real estate boom in Florida. Prices are up 5% year over year. And so far, high interest rates have not killed off the market here and in many other markets. Is that going to continue? Or
yeah, I mean, I spoke to a local realtor that I know here in Florida, and he says the houses that are like $1 to $5 million, people are paying cash.
Mm.
They're not getting mortgages. They're just paying cash for this stuff. And I would say really what you have is if you look at the data on the census and everything else, you'll see there's a massive shift since COVID from the north to the south. Mm-hmm. I had a friend who was, an executive VP up at one of the major banks in New York, and he gave me a call and he says, hey, you want to go to dinner? I said, oh, sure. I thought he was down here on vacation. And he says, no, I moved. I said, you moved? We can work virtual now. Goldman Sachs moved its most profitable division to Boca Raton. Largest hedge fund manager in New Jersey left. I mean, it cost the state $200 million in taxes. They're all coming here. I mean, from California, they've been going off to Austin, Texas, mainly.
Mm-hmm. So how are these states where we came from, New Jersey, New York, how are they going to survive in the future? They have to do a massive scaling back, a massive cutback, or they... They're waiting for another bailout like they got during COVID from the feds.
Yeah, look, you're dealing with politicians who have no understanding of markets, the future. To them, it's just like they need money. We'll just take us, turn us upside down and shake everything out of our pockets. That's about it. There's no fiscal responsibility at all. And that's why the Federal Reserve is in trouble. All right. They can raise rates and we say, oh, gee, that'll make the stock market go down. It doesn't. Why? Because they raise rates, it's supposed to stop us from borrowing. Mm-hmm. Right. Does it have any impact on the government? This is the exact opposite. Politicians don't sit there and say, oh, gee, the Fed raised the rates, so they want us to spend less. They don't even pay attention. They continue down their journey, spending and spending. And because you raise the rates, this is the first time now you're going to have interest expenditures for the United States hitting $1 trillion. I mean, I remember Ronald Reagan, everybody got upset. Oh, the national debt hit $1 trillion back then. Now we're talking about the annual interest rate is $1 trillion.
Yeah.
It's just absurd, the whole thing.
Yeah, it certainly is. So, hey, AI, we hear about AI every day. I even use it to take notes on my podcasts and my video cast now. And it's a big time saver. Basically, it does 80% of the job I used to pay somebody to do. Now I do the extra 20% in a couple minutes. Where do you see all this ending up?
Well, it would be very nice if we've replaced judges and the government with AI.
Yeah, exactly.
At least they can't be bribed, you know. But, you have to understand, there are some of these people that, talk about AI as like some major threat, like the Matrix or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. It depends entirely upon what you're going to plug into it. I've developed AI, from the 1970s.
Yeah.
And our computer's fantastic, but it's limited to the database that we gave it, which is the world financial markets of all the different countries.
Right.
It's not plugged into the internet. It's not going to answer, gee, what's Lady Gaga's dog's name? or anything of that nature. Yeah. But I mean, AI, what they're doing, like with the chat type things. I mean, it's impressive to somebody that doesn't really understand the coding behind it. But it's not really as much of a threat as long as you don't go, turning it into as far as being in charge of sending missiles and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, they're using it with drones now. One of the alarming things I find most alarming about the Ukraine war is these use of drones where you're going along minding your own business and, the thing hits and boom, basically they just blow you up and they could do these swarms, clear out whole cities. I mean, obviously, the sociopaths are running everything and nothing is off the table here, Martin.
No, it's not. I mean, that's you have to understand this is why they're after Trump so much. And they also would not allow, Kennedy to come in. They have control. All right. And I mean, I've met most of heads of state. In the course of my career, I went to Mar-a-Lago back in March of 20. And it was the first time I would say that Trump actually impressed me. Mm-hmm. He said that he wanted to pull the troops out of Afghanistan because he was sick and tired of writing letters to families to say their son died for, God and country. And he actually said, he says, what are we doing there? They've been fighting over borders for 1,000 years. What difference, are we going to make? And, John Bolton came out, oh, this is outrageous. Bolton would basically invade Canada to get one Russian. I mean, that's basically what these people always want, war. And Both Trump and Kennedy are against war. So when Trump, I mean, that drone that Iran shot down was unmanned, and Bolton wanted to launch an attack against Iran, and Trump said no. It was an unmanned drone.
Model airplane.
Yeah. And he said, I'm not going to start a war because they shot down a drone. But this is what these people want. So Trump starts firing these neocons. And as soon as Biden came in, they're all back. Victoria Nuland is the queen of them. I mean, she's the number two in the State Department now. You just had her boss, Blinken, come out. I couldn't even believe it. I put it on my blog. He says, well, nuclear war is not that really big of a deal. It's no worse than climate change. I mean, I'm like, what?
Yeah, well, as long as you're not in the area that's targeted, right?
I mean, this is what these people say. They just live for war.
Yeah, so it seems.
Honestly, our computer on the 2024 election it shows there's no way possible that the Democrats could win.
Yeah. And, that's not something that would stop them, though. Hey, Martin, exactly. When I grew up, the Democrats were the party, the anti-war party. And now, you know, they wholly embrace it. And the whole military industrial complex is having a field day at the world's expense. They're getting rid of all the old Russian weapons. All right. Basically, they're all being sent to Ukraine to get blown up. And then they have to rearm, and they're not going to buy Chinese weapons. So they're going to buy Western military weapons because the whole thing makes me realize that the Cold War was a complete scam. That Russia was really never a threat because technologically, yeah, they could throw waves of people, waves of troops, but from a technological standpoint, they were generations behind the West's armament cycle.
Well, I think basically NATO is the real threat. Because in the previous book I published, The Plot to Seize Russia, the neocons were against Reagan from even meeting with Gorbachev. You can't trust the Russian. And they were beside themselves. And Reagan said, no, I'm meeting, and because I think Russia's falling apart. And it was. All right. And they were even proposing at that time that Russia join NATO.
I remember, yeah.
And, effectively, that ended up being the coup to take down Gorbachev because they were afraid that the hardliners didn't want him joining NATO. And that's basically what all that stuff was about. But, NATO has no purpose if Russia is not an enemy. So they have to keep that up. No matter what it is, they threaten, Russia's going to invade and take all over Europe. The Russian people don't want to do that any more than the American people want to go and invade Russia and occupy that country. Those are old days of empire building. I don't think the population on either side are interested in invading other countries and occupying. No. That's heads of state that do that kind of stuff.
Hey, it's the concept of cannon fodder kind of came into the existence late 1800s when you started getting these, basically, I guess, Napoleon, but the Civil War. But you would have thought we had advanced beyond cannon fodder. But that's what these troops on the front lines of the war are. They're cannon fodder, and they're just throwing people into the mix. I mean,
they don't even care.
I know. These are but the people care. The people whose sons are going out there to fight, they care. And, I find it really distressing. We're in the 21st century. We have AI and all these other things. And yet we're still blowing each other up, seemingly for no purpose other than perhaps a misguided ideal of reducing world population. Because when you get down to it, they view us as just a bunch of eaters that take up valuable resources and don't really produce anything.
Well, it's even worse than that. You take Victoria Nuland, her family's from Ukraine, know, and there's so many conflicts of interest here. It's absurd. And then you take the Donbass. They're all Russians that live there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Russia was right up to the river there of the Tsars before USSR. That's why you have so many Russians living in that area. That was their country.
Hey, I have friends here. You know, there's so many Russians and Ukrainians in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can name off probably close to a dozen people I know from the region. The weird thing is, I'll say to one guy, well, so you're Ukrainian? Yeah, I'm Ukrainian, but I grew up in Russia. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I speak Russian. Oh, you're Russian? Yeah, I'm Russian, but I grew up in the Ukraine. And it's like, what's going on here? These people, it's literally like brother killing brother. You know, they're all kind of related here. And just find the whole concept of this war maddening. And man, the only thing you could say is that there's certain segments of the population, of business, of industry, the military industrial complex, they're having a field day because they get all their weapons destroyed. So new rearmament cycle, and they get to prove them in the battle testing, because you know, the observers are there watching to see how everything performs. It's exactly like World War I. If you remember the fuses in the artillery shells, the English, I think, sold off to the Germans, their munitions companies. And it was a whole scandal. And they just keep leaking it to one another to keep the race going. Well, Martin, I could talk to you all day, but we don't have time for that. ArmstrongEconomics.com. Next time, I'd like you guys to send in questions. I'm going to address a list of questions to you, Martin, if you don't mind. And keep an eye out for the de-dollarization book. Excited to see it. If you got a question for Martin or myself, KL@CarrieLutz.com. And while you're at the site, FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com. Sign up for your free newsletter. Martin, really appreciate it. You be well.
You too. Thanks a lot. Take care of yourself.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.